sense of sort of basar echad, this real sense of oneness. And it goes without saying for myself, married for 2.5 decades, or really vacant at the Blumenthal, and for all of you, you know, we recognize that sometimes that process of becoming symbiotic with the other person, of creating that unit, of that partnership, albeit it is incredibly beautiful, it's incredibly meaningful, it's where all the growth really comes from in life, it's the kernel of so much of joy in life. And so then we recognize that that process, like anything that's meaningful, is often, as Ray Bacon just mentioned, sometimes challenging. Now, the challenges in Shalom Bayis, I remember when I first married back in the mid-90s, somebody mentioning who'd been married for a couple years, I'm not sure if he's trying to scare me off of the whole adventure altogether, said that you can gain more and grow more in how you navigate one disagreement or argument with your wife, more so than learning Mesilas Yesharim 20, 30 times. And that's absolutely true. You know, the growth that comes sometimes through challenge. Now, there's often challenges under normal circumstances. You know, husbands or wives go off to work, or they go off to learn, or they have their lives. But still, navigating a home life, navigating raising children, navigating communication, shalom bayis is challenging. But that becomes even more so, of course, under these circumstances. There's an expression that my kids like to use. It's Midos boot camp. Right? Sometimes you're in a situation, it's like whatever the Midos challenge is, but intensified in such a way that it's like a boot camp experience. And these past 2 months, in a lot of ways, it's like a Shalom Bayis boot camp. People are always with each other. There's the constant challenge, so to speak, of communicating properly, of patience, of trying to be our best selves, of not getting annoyed by, certainly by the big things, but even the small things. You know, this person is snoring too loudly, and this person is making a mess, and this person is, whatever the situation might be, that maybe under normal circumstances, people are well equipped to handle. In circumstances like this, always together, day in and day out, often without enough sleep, often not in our own homes, etc., there are just the challenges of navigating this sort of Shalom Bayis boot camp, which the last couple of months have been. Now, I want to just mention what Ray Bacon alluded to, that because this is something which is unusual, because it's something which can be difficult, and because people are always together, and because our very best, and sometimes, I know for myself, sometimes our very worst are on display, the situation of the last 2 to 3 months, it also puts a microscope on those areas of our life that we need to work on. Right? Sometimes something that's revealed only after years of a quote-unquote normal living situation, when it's like this, you're always with your spouse, you're always with your kids, it furthers highlights some of those issues. And in a way, that's a bracha, because you know that highlighting of those issues really allows us to understand them, to see them, to confront them, and to hopefully deal with them. I want to pass over to Dr. Blumenthal in a few minutes, but I just very briefly, just from my perspective, want to just touch on 4 different aspects that perhaps have come up. There are many, many more. There's something that we could talk about for not just hours, but days as far as Shalom Bayis, and especially in the circumstance. But just very briefly, just to highlight or touch on 4 different things. I'm not going to answer any questions. I'm not going to give any real advice. That's why they paid Dr. Blumenthal the big bucks to come up with all the solutions of every mental health issue. Dr. Blumenthal, that's going to be your job in, you know, the 13 minutes that you're allotted. But what I'm going to doing is highlighting an issue and then passing it over to far more qualified people than myself to try to give hadracha on those issues. So let me just highlight 4 issues. And I highlight them, A, just really for identification, that you sort of understand in a way that, you know, that we collectively have a sense of the issues going on. And also that almost like as a springboard for you to be able to reach out to myself or Rabbi Bacon or the Mashgichim or Bayim at the Blumenthal to maybe sort of discuss this in at greater length. Just one thing very briefly, and I only mention this because I've had many conversations with some of the Chevra, is the challenge of how to sort of navigate the issue of like how to deal with all the time that sometimes we have. You know, a guy's supposed to be in the kollel, he's out having, he's supposed to have a chavrusa, or he's at work, or his wife's at work. Yeah, and now he's at home 17 hours a day. And sometimes not totally sure exactly, you know, what to do with oneself, how to use free time, feeling maybe bad that I can't learn in all my free time, I don't have the energy to do that. And now what do I do during those hours? How do I find healthy outlets during those hours that I can feel good about, that also doesn't turn into me isolating, that also doesn't turn into something destructive? How to sort of navigate maybe like a different type of scenario where a person can be honest and say, I feel a little bit irritable, a little bit discontent, I'm a little bit bored, I need something more than just, you know, my wife and my husband and my child and my Gemara, and how do I sort of navigate through that in a way that is somewhat unique when a person is spending so many hours with unstructured time at home, how to navigate through sort of seeking out in a healthy way that we can feel good about, that is self-validating, what to do during so many down hours. That's one thing I just wanted to highlight. Want to highlight also, I'm not sure where all of you are coming from or where all of you are sitting at the moment. You know, usually the way you can tell if a person's at their parents' home or in their own apartment is how old the furniture looks. If you're in a place that looks halfway nice, the assumption is you're your parents' place. If you're in a place where you're sitting on a couch that looks like it came from your great aunt Mildred, so my assumption is that you're in Washington Heights. Yeah, but for those of you, Yosef, those are nice bookshelves behind you, so I figure you're not, you know. So those of you who are very, very quietly listening to this in your parents' home or in your in-laws' home, it just goes without saying the challenges of at age 23, 24, 25, 27, to go back living with one's parents on a full-time basis. And speaking as a parent of kids that age, it's a challenge for the parents as well. How to sort of bring your kids back to the home, how to come back to your house as an adult, and to deal perhaps with some of the annoyances of your parents, to deal with your parents who, now that you're home, don't really know how to deal with you as a full-fledged adult. They're used to you being 17 years old. And you come back to their house, you're independent, you've made decisions, in many cases you have children, you've got married. You know, at the same time, often your parents are doing, you know, your laundry. So you're an adult, you're independent, also living in your parents' home, often to some degree being dependent on them. On the one hand, feeling a lot of hakaras hatov towards parents, on the other hand, feeling a little bit frustrated by them. And there's, of course, a specific dynamic between children and their parents, daughter-in-laws and their in-laws, sons-in-laws and their in-laws. Sometimes it's more difficult, sometimes it's less difficult dealing with in-laws versus parents. But again, it just goes without saying the challenges of sort of living full-time away from your natural habitat, back with your parents in a way that often makes it very, very challenging. That's just issue number two, just to sort of frame that issue. And lastly, the third and fourth issues are things that, you know, every couple requires. As I mentioned, I'm married already for decades. I need to work on this every single day of my life. And it's certainly true by people my age and older, and I'm sure it's true by you as well. And what I try to conceptualize for myself is the idea of, am I constantly living in a space with boundaries? Now, when we say boundaries, of course, we're speaking about physical boundaries. You don't want to be sort of too close to people. If you're a parent and you're always trying to hug your kids, that's certainly a boundary violation. There's all sorts of like obvious boundary violations that should be obvious. For certain people, they're not so obvious. When I speak about boundaries, I speak about things that are a little bit more subtle, but absolutely critical to healthy relationships. And again, let me just mention it and frame it quickly. Now, the first is to ask ourselves, are we in a good containment boundary? Now, what do we mean by containment boundary? It means that if I'm too tired, or I'm frustrated, or I'm angry, if I've sort of violated what sometimes we might call halt, I'm hungry, angry, lonely, tired, I'm in a bad mood, I'm frustrated, there's a very good chance that I'm not going to be contained. Namely, that I'm allowing my stuff, my frustrations, my irritability, my anger, my disappointments, to leak out, you know, onto my wife, onto my husband. And we need to constantly be working on ourselves to make sure that we have enough self-care, to make sure we're working through our own issues, to make sure that we are at peace with ourselves. Because if we don't do that, we leak out. You know, our stuff ends up encroaching on the lives, the peace, the space, the happiness of our spouses. That's always true. It's especially true when we're together 24 hours a day, often 7 days a week, of constantly needing to work on those containment boundaries. And what do we have to do internally to make sure that we are staying within those boundaries, to make sure that we are happy, healthy, functioning people, that we can stay contained instead of encroaching on the emotional, psychological, spiritual space of our spouses, our children, and people around us. That's the containment boundary. And at the same token, this is what we would call, which is incredibly difficult, our protective boundary. What's a protective boundary? Protective boundary means we're not taking every single thing in and allowing every emotion, every perception, every judgment of the outside world to either bring us up or bring us down. You know, my wife or my husband, my wife in my case, obviously, not in a good mood, maybe a little tired, maybe a little irritable. She's a human being like everyone else. Do I respond to that by saying, okay, person's not in a good mood? Or in a certain way, do I take that in? I'm not protected. In certain ways, I become very reactive and very defensive and very sort of blaming, and I'm hearing a tone of voice that doesn't exist. Am I emotionally and psychologically protected against some of the things that the people in my life are doing? Again, in this case, it's wife and children, but it could be anybody. It could be friends or boss or chavrusa or parents or in-laws. Am I protected? And part of that protection, again, this is a very complicated topic and something that Dr. Blumenthal is probably an expert in, others as well. When I'm reacting because I'm not well protected, is it a healthy reaction? Is it an adult reaction? Or is it like a trauma reaction? I'm reacting like a kid. I'm reacting to something that may not be in front of me, maybe from 20 years ago, maybe because of an issue from my home, or my parents, or my mother, or my father. So often we lose that protective boundary because we're responding not to what's there, but that's tapping into other things. And we're super sensitive, or we're constantly feeling abandoned, or constantly feeling spoken down to in certain types of ways. And if we're in that place, we can't be protected. We're always feeling defensive or sensitive. Those are just four of the things. Again, each one of these is a huge Torah in and of itself. Just four things that were on my mind. Number one, again, how to navigate the world of having ambitions, but at the same time recognizing we need free time to validate those needs, to affirm those needs, not be down on ourselves about it, to find productive, healthy outlets that don't lead to isolation. Number two, just how to navigate the issue of parents and in-laws not in our home, how to claim our own space, but at the same time be very respectful of the space we're living in with our parents. Number three, how to make sure that we're always in containment boundaries. Not always, it can't always happen, but to make sure that we're sensitive of how we're speaking and how we're coming off and not encroaching on the space and not allowing our frustration or anger or tiredness to encroach on another person. And lastly, which again is so critical, to always make sure we have those great protective boundaries, that I'm not responsive and reactive to everything my wife or husband might be doing, but I have enough of my own inner core, my strong inner core, that allows me to navigate those relationships. Those are just a few of the things that were on my mind, and certainly looking forward to what Dr. Blumenthal has to say, if people have any thoughts, questions, feelings about what I spoke about, please, by all means, send us a chat. I would remind you, Rebecca, I'm not sure how this is set up. If it is of a personal nature, make sure it's going to Dr. Blumenthal, myself only, or Rebecca only. We're all friends here, but you know, we should also, you know, I'll just mention that a little before you start. This is just like sort of as like a funny aside. Again, we don't have so much time, but when I was the Rabbi in Einstein many, many years ago, there was a couple who was going out for a year, and the male broke up with the female. They're both now married to other people. It was like a devastating breakup for her. And she sent him a long email of her feelings about it, but accidentally sent it to the entire Albert Einstein email list instead of just to this young man. So she has this whole long email. And then a second later, she says another email. She's like, needless to say, that was not meant for the entire shul. So, you know, sometimes with these like big WhatsApp groups, sometimes we lose ourselves and need to make sure that, you know, things that are supposed to get to someone are going to the right address. And with that, I'll turn it over to the real experts.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rabbi Blass. And I also want to reiterate and thank Rabbi Bacon for coming up with this idea. That's important as well, not only just implementing it. And Rabbi Blass, you mentioned with the first time we were present together, as I was listening to you, I was regretting the fact that we haven't in the past. So much of what you said is so profound, and I hope this is the beginning of a new collaboration. I also think it's important to commend the entire REITS administration, Rebbeim, who have done so much to keep the momentum going under these difficult circumstances. And this is one of the many ways in which our yeshiva is maintaining the connections and maintaining all that the yeshiva has to offer under these very strenuous circumstances. Rabbi Blass mentioned that I'm getting paid the big bucks to do this work, to give this presentation. Given what I'm getting paid for this presentation, I really hope you're not going to get your money's worth, because I hope it'll be worth a little bit more than that. But actually, as I was looking at the audience and listening to Rabbi Blass, I was actually reminded of a situation I had when I was in the yeshiva many more decades ago than I care to think. But I had the very special zechus to be in the shir of Rav Aaron Kreiser, Zichrono Livracha. I don't know how many people know who Rav Aaron Kreiser is or was, but he was one of those giants who really, you know, affected that transition of the European yeshivas to America. It was from the Altamir and went through Shanghai. And at one time he was giving us mussar. And he was giving us mussar because we were just blown away by him. We just couldn't, like, he was just brilliant how he learned the Gemara, and we felt like overwhelmed. So he was sort of giving us mussar and saying, look, I just learn all day. You have a lot of things to do. And he gave shir in Hebrew, and he was listing all the things you have to do, that you have to, you know, get college grades, you have to get into graduate school, you know. And then he said at one point, "Utzichim lehit chatein." Now, we were a bunch of immature 19-year-olds, so we all started laughing. And he sort of started laughing, goes, ha, 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 choshvim shekreiza lo yodea, lo nolarti zaken. I didn't know that someday that I would be standing here and saying to you guys, lo nolarti zaken. I was once young married myself, and and hopefully can be helpful and address these issues. Now, let me just sort of focus which of you I'm addressing, which subgroup would be probably most importantly addressed by both Rabbi Blass and myself. There may be some of you who are really weathering the storm very well and are enjoying each other's company, enjoying the time together, are having a fairly blissful, enjoyable, uncomplicated relationship, or it's not changed terribly by the circumstances you're in. It's good to listen. It's good to learn. There's much to learn. There's much to understand. And I think a lot of even the points that I last mentioned, how we organize them, was useful for me. But it may not be directly germane to your situation. Now, there may be another group, and I think it's important to address that, who may have some serious marital difficulties, where there may be some overt conflict or complications. And that may have been problematic before and have been exacerbated by the pressure and the stress of what's going on now. And I think it's important to identify that group, because first of all, it can happen to anyone. It's happened to very wholesome, normal people. We have short courtships. Dating is not the same as marriage. And sometimes some significant complications emerge. That can happen to anyone. It's not anything to be embarrassed about. But sometimes these kind of speeches are frustrating because we're giving some fairly basic suggestions how to cope, et cetera. And with those more serious and significant problems, it's almost as if to say to them, well, if you'd only compromise, you wouldn't have all these problems. It's frustrating. And if you are in that group, there is therapy available. And actually, most of us in the mental health field are amazed how well the Zoom therapy is working. I'm not sure if I'll ever meet anybody again in person. But there's help available even now, and you should seek it out. And there are many couples that went through some very stormy times where it may have even seemed hopeless and bleak. Some needed to get divorced, and that's okay too. And some, you know, were able to work out the difficulties and have some, sometimes most people will even say, even better marriages as a result of having overcome those complications. So for that subgroup, I'm not saying you shouldn't listen, but a lot of what we're going to say might sound trivial or unimportant. The group that we're focusing on is the group that have a workable marriage, a stable marriage, even a wholesome marriage, but there may be pockets of difficulty, maybe areas that are complicated, either had pre-existed and now, like everything else, being amplified by the stressful situation we're in, or maybe it was engendered by the situation we're in, and or for that matter, maybe the stress of combination of being, you know, quarantined, sheltered in, and now having a new baby, or being, as Roy Glass mentioned, being with in-laws or parents in the basement in that sort of regressive position. And this is creating either new problems or exacerbating problems in an otherwise stable and functional marriage. I think that's the group that we're really focusing on at this time. So I'm going to discuss some of the complications, but I'm also going to try to offer some solutions with all the pitfalls and shortcomings that, again, was alluded to earlier by Blas, of trying to generalize about human beings when everybody's situation, everybody's marriage, and everybody's parents and in-laws have very unique dynamics. First of all, important to remind ourselves that marriage is an ongoing and growing and changing experience. In contrast to your fairy tales or to your romantic novels or even some of the, when they used to have like novel romantic movies, I don't know if they still do, where the sort of theme was the couple usually have a chance meeting, fall madly in love, ultimately get married, and then live happily ever after. And it's like just goes on. One of the cartoons that some of you guys may remember from the course I have shows a father reading a story to a child, and he's saying, and the prince married the princess and lived happily together for a fairly long time. But that's the, you know, again, this theme that you know, it's just you get fall in love, you get married, and then you just coast, which is not the case. And we know that to be the case. We date and we have courtship, and there's a fondness for one another. There's an awareness of a tremendous amount of potential, which we capitalize on most of the time, proves to be the case. But the marriage and the love and the closeness and the connection is an ever-going, ongoing process, even at my station in life. And certainly at your station in life, it's really getting initiated post-marriage. In fact, Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch, and again, I have to ask Rishus from Rabbi Bacon, Rabbi Blass, and just about everybody else here, because I'm probably the least qualified to share the Divrei Torah, but it's, when it comes up, it's certainly worthwhile. But Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch famously, in the Pasuk about Yitzchak and Rivka, says, Vayikach lo sol yisha vayahaveha. And he married her and he loved her. And Rav Hirsch points out, it's again the contrast with the fairy tales where the love comes first and then you just get married. There he says you get married and the love grows afterwards. Now, in Hirsch's time, probably there were more arranged marriages and there was less of a dating process. So we do get married when there is already affection and love, but certainly much of the love and much of the connection evolves afterwards. Now, particularly in early marriage, you're transitioning from a life at home, family, friends, etc., into this new, very special relationship. Actually, I happen to know, I work closely with Rabbi David Cohen from Brooklyn, and he has a term, he calls it bachuritis, when the yeshiva bacher treats his wife like it's another yeshiva bacher, and how they have to learn that being married is not a roommate in yeshiva. But this is a whole new transition. And one of the ways, as was again alluded to by Rabbi Blass, in which this is nurtured, is by being apart and being together. That's a very important part of building this relationship for several reasons. First of all, there's the novelty, being refreshed by the reunion. And that's important. We have a tendency, if we're around something constantly, we sort of acclimate to it and we don't treat it with importance. My wife and my mother, Lao Shalom, would say, with Siegeweint. You know, you just sort of, I don't know if there's an English translation for Siegeweint, but you just kind of get used to it. Sometimes as an example I give, I happen to live in the Five Towns and we're right next to JFK. That Roy Billet, and there's a Woodmere always says that when Mashiach comes, we'll be the first ones to go because we're right here by JFK. I don't hear the airplanes. And sometimes when friends come over or relatives come over, they practically duck from the noise of the planes. But when something's there constantly, you kind of, which is adaptive, because sometimes you have to adapt to annoying or difficult situations. And in fact, I'll give another example. My father, Lo Shalom, was in the leather business for 30 years, and his office had that very intense smell of fresh leather. He couldn't smell it. Even when he had even retired for 20, 30 years, he still couldn't smell leather. So we have a capacity to so adapt and take things for granted. And that's the last thing we want to do with our spouse. So the being apart and coming back together is important. The other reason why it's important is a lot of this connection that you're nurturing and developing and will continue to for decades to come has to do with having separate lives. When you come back together in the evening and each of you have had your day of activity, job, work, etc., when you come back together, you share it and you have something to talk about. But if your entire day is identical and then you know every move about the other person, there isn't that much then to talk about when you reunite. So this very important part of nurturing a relationship is now being compromised potentially by being sheltered in, especially being sheltered in a basement or in a small apartment. In fact, it's interesting, this is a phenomenon that we don't see today so much, but I remember earlier in my practice it was a little bit more common when somebody had like a small business or had a shop or something like that, and the husband and wife would work together all day. And it was a challenge. It was really a challenge. Sometimes they were able to work it out by having different roles and different places in the office, but it was a complication that you were together so much. So this is one area in which we have to address and figure out how we can work around that under the current circumstances. The other thing is also, and this is a common theme that we're emphasizing a lot during this crisis, is the way I'm wording it is that what was is going to be all the more. That when you're in a stressful situation like you are now, the little problems become bigger, the strengths become stronger. So your resilience, your strength, the very functional, healthy, and wholesome parts of your marriage are going to be even greater and more appreciative. You can be more appreciative of them. But the problems can get bigger. And the minor little problem that may not have been so disruptive before the stress of this current situation can grow. We often talk about the mathematics of trauma, or as one of my colleagues say, 5 out of 4 psychologists don't know math. But the mathematics of trauma is that 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 4. 2 plus 2 equals 8. And when you have one problem and it piggybacks on another one, it grows exponentially. My mother, Allah Shalom, who was a Holocaust survivor with a treasure trove of Yiddish sayings, one of them was, and I won't try to say it in Yiddish out of respect for the language, but one of them was that when a poor man has a hernia, there's a pimple on it. And therefore, right now, the small annoyances can become bigger ones. Now, what we're doing now, and I know Rabbi Blass mentioned that there's so much to learn, and I'm going to integrate that in what I'm saying, because I think that's definitely the fact. But a lot of the messages we're giving to people who are calling, especially those calling in crisis, is now is not the time to fix things. Now is the time to identify maybe the problems. That's what's important. Maybe identify the small problems that, for convenience sake, or not wanting friction, you might have just sort of pushed aside. Now that they're more amplified, it's an opportunity to identify the areas in the relationship that may need improvement. Again, in a good, wholesome, loving relationship. But I'm not sure if now we're going to fix them, especially if there's a lot of stress and pressure in your lives, whether it's having to do work from home, whether it's having to manage finances when one's being paid less or out of work. sometimes it's sort of a metaphor I give is, imagine you're in the Midwest and there's a tornado coming. And you hunker down, you board up all the windows and you tie down all your metalcholin, and you're just about ready for a tornado to come, and your husband says to you, oh, by the way, that sink in the basement is leaking. Maybe we should try to fix it. And now's not the time. I mean, remember that the sink is leaking, but when the tornado's over, take care of it. But right now, we're not necessarily addressing these issues. It's almost like the age-old paradox that sometimes you have to be healthy to be treated. A surgeon will tell you that he needs a healthy person so they can sustain the surgery. Sometimes we have to wait until our life circumstances are less complicated to address some of these problems. Let me also mention, as again was alluded to by Glass, is you might be in your parents' basement, you might be in your in-laws' basement. I think his point he made in terms of the sort of aggressive nature is important, but there's also other parts to it as well. First of all, you don't have necessarily your privacy if you're living with your parents. One thing is to visit them for a Yom Tov. It's another to be day in and day out and for them to see, know everything. And that can be a problem, especially for a young couple. Also, let's say you're staying with your in-laws. They have their own way of communicating. They have their own way of operating. You're a newcomer, and you don't quite fit in. There's sort of a dance, sort of like a connection that they have that is foreign to you, and you don't quite, as I said, you don't quite fit in. And that can become, it's tolerable for a Yom Tov, but it can be complicated when it's day in and day out. And then again, as I alluded to earlier, let's say it's a husband staying with his in-laws. Your wife is at this point conceivably more at home with her parents and her siblings than they are with you. I mean, this is the transition period. And so it's one thing when you're together in your separate abode and you're learning to develop a connection that's going to be unparalleled. But at this early stage, she might be more at home. She's with people who know her, have known her for years. They have a style of communicating, et cetera. And you're kind of an outsider. And that can create problems that hadn't existed previously. The other thing is also, and again, with a baby, and many of you are at that stage again, where you're starting to have children, a baby just isn't this cute little thing that hangs around the house and doesn't change much. Every child that's born changes the whole dynamics of the home and changes the dynamics of the relationship. It is a new challenge, a new way to reconfigure relationships, roles within the family. And there's a great deal of worry and concern, every sniffle, et cetera. And so now there's a whole new, so we can add on early marriage, getting used to each other, developing this incredible relationship, having the pressure of the COVID-19, being quarantined, worrying about the finances, worrying about when life's going to resume, and being with in-laws and a baby. It's, again, we'll go back to the mathematics. It's 2 + 2 + 2 + 2. And it can really create tension and problems that wouldn't have existed otherwise. So again, as I said, I don't want to be just a hand-wringer. Let me talk about some suggestions, ways in which to manage this time period. First of all, try as best you can to recreate that apart and together. It is an important part of the relationship. Now, if you're fortunate enough to live in a large apartment, or you already have a home, or your parents gave you their home or something, then that's a little bit easier. I know it's easier for me because Baruch Hashem, I live in a 4 or 5 bedroom house and with a den and with a, so even though three of us are here, we're apart most of the day and then we can reunite. It's much easier. It's a little hard and more challenging in the apartment with the great aunt's Mildred's couch. But you can still do it. You can have your corner. You can have your separate rooms. Be apart. Come back together. Do your separate lives. Reunite. This is a healthy way and of living. And it again, may have to be more artificially created. But make sure you have your own time and make sure you have time together. Time together again for that reuniting, for that refreshing, for that gratefulness that you have each other, and for an opportunity to share your day and to talk about what you had been involved with. And again, this reuniting, you don't have to do anything profound. You don't have to discuss your inner psychological mechanisms, etc. It can be casual conversation about your day. It can be playing a game together. that can be exercising together, which is very important now as we're sort of confined to the house. But these things are important and can be enjoyable, but again, you need to sort of more artificially create it. You need novelty. Now, novelty doesn't mean, I'm not suggesting that, you know, dye your hair green and have a star, do a seance. But again, we want to avoid that monotony. We don't want things to be redundant. And again, that may happen more naturally when we're more mobile and our world is bigger. But when our world has become so confined, we have to be more deliberate in the way of introducing novelty. And again, without talking about it explicitly, that's an important part of intimacy as well, that there is, so nothing should become boring, nothing should become just routine. And again, it doesn't require radical changes, but just some introduction of novelty, change the menu, change the schedule, introduce a whole different way of just being cute with each other, funny with each other, so that there is newness. And that'll be part of marriage, again, for decades and decades. Your dress, how you groom and your dress. When we're home all day, there's a tendency to look schlumpy, to stay in your pajamas, you know. So there was one of the funny postings that were going around was that I have my daytime pajamas, my nighttime pajamas. And there may be, again, a tendency just to wear the same old, oversized, comfortable clothing, but not terribly flattering clothing. Now, for some people, that might be okay. But again, if you want to preserve the excitement and the attraction and novelty that would be more natural, get dressed, you know, get groomed, put on the perfume, put on the cologne. And by the way, for men too, it's not just a woman, not for just for a woman. The makeup, the mouthwash, put yourself together, not just for work, but make yourself appealing and looking good. And by the way, it's also important for work. You know, there's just being in some more formal clothing does lend itself to more efficiency, but it's also important for the couple, for Shabbos in particular, wear your Shabbos clothing. Don't just sort of lounge around in schlumpy clothing, and again, with changing it, novelty and newness. If you're staying with your in-laws or parents, it's imperative that you make the daughter-in-law or son-in-law aware that they are the primary people in your life. Even though you're much more at home, perhaps, with your parents, even though you're much more at home with your siblings, for that matter, you're probably much more at home with your friends, even though you're separated from them. But this is now the primary relationship in your life. And again, one of the worst things to do in any point in marriage is what the term we use is taken for granted. Right? You know, when sometimes things like this come up, I say, well, they know. No, they don't know. One of the calls that I'm getting, just to give you an example, is situations where one set of parents are very loose about, already just given up on the social distancing and want visits with the grandchildren and et cetera, and the other parent is being very strict about it, and you know, you're feeling caught between in the conflict. It's your decision, you decide between yourselves, and that's more important than what the parents, and parents are important, and the in-laws are important, and brothers-in-law, sisters, et cetera, but they take a backseat to your relationship. And by the way, the same thing might be, again, especially important in early marriage, if you are still connecting with your friends and you're still Zooming and on the phone and or with relatives that you've known for years and years, and this person you married, you know, for a year or two. Share it with them. Make them part of it. I was on the phone with my childhood friend, Yossi, my childhood friend, Sarah. And we talked about that again, so that each spouse realizes that they're now the primary relationship. Also, one more thing, which again, we're seeing quite a bit, is again, we're under a lot of pressure and there's a lot of tension. And there's financial tension. There's tension about being apart from people, being confined to the home. That in and of itself, in fact, a lot of the research shows that quarantine itself, you know, some of us think when this is over, we're just going to wipe our brow and go back to our communal life. That's not necessarily the case. It takes an adjustment, and there's going to be a wariness when we get out of this. But there's actual tendency when we're pressured to what's called scapegoat, which comes, of course, from the Ezla Zazel, to take it out. Even animals will. They did a study years ago, and they were allowed to torture animals. That they took some rats and they just randomly hurt them. You know, they just made their lives miserable. And they threw in doll rats, and the rats ripped the dolls to shreds, which they wouldn't have done otherwise. So we have to be careful. If you're under pressure, it stays where it belongs. And you should most certainly talk about it with your spouse and share with him or her and try to help solve it. But don't use them. If you need a punching bag, you know, call Amazon and get a real punching bag. But the home is not that. And then again, also, as I mentioned earlier, there'll be issues come up. And if your life's okay, if things are all right, and you're not feeling the pressure of the confinement or having to try to work remotely or maintain your learning remotely, then you can deal with it. But many things today with what's the stress we're under, we have to park. We have to sort of put aside and recognize it, enumerate it, label it, make it an on the agenda for when things get back to normal. Because again, as mentioned earlier, matters will come up that you wouldn't recognize necessarily. But now may not be the time. And it's okay to say, under these circumstances, you know, we're not going to deal with this now because there's too much else going on. I sometimes said to my wife when things were rough, I said, my worry quotient is used up. I'm not going to worry about this because I can't. And there's just so much I can worry about. So we're going to use the very established tradition, the defense mechanism called denial. I'm just not going to face it because I can't now. It's one thing if you're avoiding something because you don't have the courage to face it. Another one, you're on overload. Many of us are on overload now. In fact, I was running a group, just to give an example, of parents with children with disabilities. And one of the mothers was saying that she's fighting with her kid over the use of the tablets and all that. And I was basically saying to her, you're getting along. Your shalom bias is more important than the tablet. And I even promised her that when all this is over, I'll help her get her kid off of his tablet if my wife can get me off my device, and I'll help him with that. But we are parking things. Let me just conclude with an interesting body of research, and it may seem not relevant to you, but it is in a way relevant. There's data that suggests that couples who reminisce about the early years of their marriage, who will just talk fondly and with amusement about their dating, first meeting respective parents, those early years of being together and having a child, and just think, you know, just naturally reminisce about this, are usually in happier marriages, or it seems to be an important ingredient in terms of marital bliss. This capacity not to remember bitter things, not to get into a fight over what you did the first time you met each other's parents, but to fondly reminisce about this is a healthy form of marriage. And I think the reason for that is there's part of it is just to remember those heady days when it was just so exciting and so stimulating, so that you can make sure that your marriage later on is infused with that enthusiasm. But also, it's a reminder of what you've been through and what you've done. It's a corollary to some other research that shows that families that share family histories, and particularly a history of facing hardships, overcoming it, difficult times, and how they managed, how the children in those families have better coping mechanisms than those who don't have those kind of family narratives. So you're writing that narrative now. You're establishing that narrative, and you want to endure and get through this period of time, and God willing, it will end soon, but you want to endure this in such a fashion that 10 years, 20, 40, 50 years from now, when you're telling your family history, when you're reminiscing together, you know, and you're sitting on that rocking chair and reminiscing about your marriage, and you remember those years with the coronavirus, the COVID-19, and how we did this, and how did we ever get through that, and wasn't that crazy, and fondly recall or heroically recall how you managed it. That's going to be part of your narrative, part of your history, and you're writing that story now, and God willing, you'll, with the help that you're getting and support, you should be able to write a very effective event. Again, as was mentioned, I welcome questions through the chat. And if people have much more sort of specific issues that they're not comfortable raising, of course, the chats can be given privately, so nobody's going to know who the chat question came from. But if there is particular issues that would like to address further but not comfortable mentioning publicly, feel free to contact me. I think most of you have my email address, but I'll just repeat it. It's drnblumenthal@gmail.com. drnblumenthal@gmail.com. I hand it back to Rabbi Bacon and Rabbi Blass at this point.
Rabbi Bacon?
Bacon?
Yeah.
Rabbi Bacon?
Yes.
If I can, I just want to just very, very briefly just add on just one or two quick things to what Dr. Blumenthal said, just by way of sort of suggestions and things to keep in mind during this period of time, and also maybe giving people opportunities to think if there's any questions or thoughts. First of all, Dr. Blumenthal, thank you so much. It's just such an excellent presentation, both as far as the content and the manner of the presentation, the warmth and caring behind it. I just want to, again, just maybe highlight just two very, very quick ideas or suggestions. You know, the first is that all the things that we normally should be doing in marriage, namely acknowledging the strengths, the gratitudes towards our spouses, things that sometimes, you know, we don't do as much as we should do, now's a really great time to focus on that. Everyone's trying their best. As Dr. Blumenthal said, many people are under stressful situations. I'm looking at this list in front of me of people that are on this call or people that had children. And then right before, quarantine began, people just got married. People are really trying their best. People are doing an amazing job. And that, you know, just to really acknowledge that, acknowledge to our spouses, even though it sounds simplistic, just I so appreciate X, Y, and Z. I so appreciate you. I appreciate the role you have in my life. As much as possible to be turning towards that positive place as opposed to something that's either, you know, always neutral or critical, chas v'shalom. And secondly, again, this is something that I sort of mentioned before, and Dr. Blumenthal spent more time speaking about, it's always important to have open communication with the spouse. It's also important to recognize when that open communication is either not the right time, maybe it's too much, and when, therefore, it's so important to have people outside of your spouse to communicate with. If you're living with your in-laws and you're frustrated about your father-in-law, your mother-in-law, the circumstances, you know, to continue, it's good to have communication, but to continue to go to your spouse over and over again to quote-unquote complain about, you know, their parents, at a certain point, I'm not saying that that should never happen, but to have people in your life, friends, rebbeim, mentors, teachers, just to make sure that you have people that you can turn to, that not everything is sort of almost being laid or dumped onto the feet, so to speak, of your spouse, to always make sure that certain issues themselves are finding outlets outside of the spouse. That's always important. And again, especially now, I would think that is doubly important as well. So that's all I wanted to mention. Bacon, anything you want to add?
Thank you, Rabbi Blass and Dr. Blumenthal. If either of you have specific questions that may have come, you can let me know. I'm just taking a quick look right now. So one question that I just thought I would mention that I just received for either Dr. Blumenthal or Rabbi Blass, but I'll just read it as follows. You know, it's a question of how to balance now that couples are home all the time and with each other all the time, and this allows a husband or a wife, seems more, this is a question coming from a husband, is more available to help out in general, to help out with childcare, to help out with dishes, to help out with cleaning, to help out with all the chores, yet they still want to be serious and consistent about their learning and their siddarim. How do they manage that in a practical way, and dealing with kind of being torn, an internal tension, be trying to be more helpful in a time when they can be, and also when there's just more stress, at the same time, not letting everything fall apart in terms of their own, you know, kind of commitments to learning and Torah and to other things. Any suggestions on that?
Refer to the rabbi first.
Well, I mean, you know, I have a feeling that both Dr. Blumenthal and I would say something very similar. I mean, it's a great question. And it's a question which is not only relevant, towards now, towards these times, but, you know, it's always relevant. And maybe this is an opportunity just to mention how often I have, and I know Vivekesh or Dr. Blumenthal, deal with couples that are really dealing with the stress of a choral life, as beautiful as that life is, but to have a husband gone, and then especially Sunday mornings and Sunday afternoons, when is it appropriate for a wife to tell a husband, you know, I just can't, you know, I need more help, I need you to stay home, I, you know, maybe, you know, miss the Seder, and to sort of be able to find that balance in general. And I think, again, there's not one answer to this question, but the one answer to this question is very, very clear and honest communication. And so that's communication on the part of either the wife or the husband who might be doing more of the housework. I need some help. I need some support to not try to be a martyr, to not try to push oneself beyond the capability, thinking that this is what Ignatius Heil does, or this is what, you know, a husband does who's supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z. Real clear communication, number one. And along the clear communication is the ability which us men are famous for sometimes not having, being able to look at our wives and have a very clear sense of what they need, right? And not to sit there saying, well, you never asked me, you know, like those are words that marriages take to their grave. You know, you never asked me, you didn't tell me. You know, you look at a person and instead of sort of waiting to be asked, then sometimes you just sort of, you know, get up and do it to really, really see, you know, and to have that ayin tova, but that clarity. And that's something, again, that we always need. A, be able to communicate, advocate for our own needs. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, that the other spouse, without even having to be asked or advocated, sort of, you know, the other person has to advocate, but you can really sort of see the other person and understand what their needs are and to respond. And also, I just want to mention, again, not to speak so long, but, you know, things can be done without a big, you know, hoopla. Oh, I did this, I did that, I washed this, oh, by the way, I washed the dishes. Just, you know, sometimes silence is the best thing. Get up early, make sure the kitchen's clean, take care of the child. You don't have to keep score, you don't have to say what you've done. It just, you know, just to sort of be your eyes open and sometimes your mouth closed. Probably a lesson that most men can learn, certainly present company included. But Dr. Blumenthal, certainly I'd like to hear anything you have to...
You said it all. I have two thoughts. One was a story I once heard that someone once came to Rav Mordechai Gift, the Zichron of Racha, and asked him, is it true that folding your talus up on Matzah Shabbos is a school of a Shalom Bias? And he said, yeah, but so is picking up a vacuum cleaner on Friday afternoon. yes, it is important all the time. I'll tell you something from my own personal life, and I think it speaks to what Roy Blass was saying. Many of you guys know that my therapy is hiking. That's my mishigas. Once every 4 to 6 weeks, I have a bunch of guys around my age. We have a fake organization called AIC, stands for Arthritic Country Hiking Expedition, and we spend a day in the woods and we hike. We're doing it for 20, 25 years now. Try to do about once every 4 to 6 weeks. But the interesting thing is that when I hike comes up or I initiate a hike, I always ask my wife first if I can go. In all the years we're married, she never said no. But I always ask her if I can go. When I come home, I thank her. That's because I'm leaving and I'm doing something self-indulgent. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's the acknowledgement that my primary responsibility is her and the home. So if I'm doing something that's outside the home, I need her, I have to do it with her permission, and I have to be grateful that she allows me to do it. Now, I'm not saying that's comparable to going to learning Seder. It's not really a comparable activity. It's a shmat masnashal sechem, but it's not. But it is when you can go to Seder, when you can go to Shir, when you can have your chavrusas, you owe your wife a great debt of gratitude, or perhaps the other way around, when your wife can do what she needs to do, and she does her learning or her religious pursuits or her opportunities to do chesed, and you allow it to happen by managing the home at that time, she owes you a gratitude. So as Rabbi Blass said, if it's spoken out, if it's said, if it's expressed, it's that's 90% of it. And by the way, Rabbi Blass talked a lot about appreciation. There's a remarkable body of research in psychology on gratitude, but not just feeling gratitude, enumerating gratitude, keeping a gratitude journal. People who keep gratitude journals have less anxiety, less depression. There's even more dopamine and serotonin secreted in the central nervous system. In other words, gratitude is actually a natural tranquilizer, a natural antidepressant. So it's so important to always express that, be aware of it, but say it, not just think it.
I don't want to overspeak this topic, but I would just mention, you know, there's different types of models of a father. And again, the expectation hopefully is that every person has a chiv in Talmud Torah. For many people, become a Talmud Chacham. Certainly the value of Talmud Torah. I mean, that is obviously understood by everyone who's on this call. But there's sort of different models. And of course, a lot of this is generational. You know, sort of the model that's in the extreme of the Vilna Gaon. You know, you read the Havdamba of his that his children wrote to the Shulchan Aruch, that the Vilna Gaon barely even danced at his kids' weddings. You know, he was so involved in the world of learning, you know, let alone diaper changing, and let alone, you know, and that's obviously one model of the Vilna Gaon. If any of you think that you might be the Vilna Gaon or you should be adopting those same standards, please immediately call Dr. Blumenthal after this speech. But I think what I found for myself, at least, and Rabbi Bacon would never say it, but this is certainly true by Rabbi Bacon, is that if you have like a father or a husband who's in the house, and he's really invested in the house, you know, he's involved with cooking or cleaning, he's really involved with kids, he's involved with kids' lives, the home is his home, you know, it shows that he's really being machshiv like their life, you know, he's being machshiv his wife, his wife's times. What his wife is doing, her work or her learning, being mashed just preparation of food. I mean, there's just, you know, and if that person can do that while at the same time making sure to wake up early to learn and make sure to be kaveh zamanim and to make sure that person's davening. I mean, I think the impact on the family when the father can be both of those things, you know, a dad, that's what he asked about Aaron Lichtenstein. First and foremost, he was a father, you know, a husband, a loving husband, an involved husband, and also someone who's a masmid. You know, I think that's really sort of the balance, especially in our era, we really, really should be striving for. And I'm sure I know everyone on this call is doing that, but I don't think in any way it diminishes sort of like the tzura of the father or husband by being also the person who's, you know, spending so much time in the house and in the kitchen and everything else. I think probably just the opposite, you know, so just want to follow on that as well.
Thank you both. Dr. Blumenthal, do you have something?
A question came through, but if we're out of time, I can respond to it individually.
Well, the time is late. There are some good questions here, definitely.
Okay.
If you would want to do 5 more minutes, and we'll wrap it up with that. Just you give one quick answer for 5 minutes, and I think we'll end it. So, is it you want to take?
So you want me to? I can paraphrase the question and just quickly try to address it if it's more
important.
It sounds like something that could be universal, but the question is about, I'm not going to say whether it's husband, wife, whatever, but one of the partners misses friends terribly by being confined and is really wondering if there's something wrong with him or her that the person is not content in the marriage. And no, marriage was never meant to be two people just totally absorbed with each other. The miracle of marriage is two people are both individuals and a unit. And there has to be part of your lives that are separate, as I've mentioned earlier. It's being apart and being together. And friends are a very, very important part of our lives. Now, ideally, you as much as possible, share your friends with your spouse. You get together as a couple, not just exclusively individually, but friendships exist sort to a certain extent independent of a marriage, and that's preserving your individuality. And that's all part of that picture of the being the part and being coming together. Nobody should feel self-conscious that they miss aspects of their lives that don't have to do with their marriage. I don't know if Rabbi, if you want to just elaborate on that, and then we can conclude.
Well, I'm going to just maybe that one thought. I want to mention a story that you might find humorous. And I think it's probably worth just emphasizing. Not that anybody who's on this call doesn't recognize that, but I spoke in Stern maybe about 4 or 5 years ago about issues of dating. And I think the part that I was supposed to speak about was how do you know when the person you're dating is someone that you're ready to marry or that you could marry or that she or he are the right person. So I mentioned that the first part is, do I enjoy being with that person? And I said, it doesn't mean that do I always enjoy being with that person, but generally, do I enjoy being with that person? So they did a question and answer afterwards where the girls wrote in questions. And one of the girls said, can I ask, please qualify or explain what he means that you don't always want to be with your future husband or your future wife, that you generally want to be with this person. So I was sort of did like a little bit of this like internal eye roll, like this poor young thing who thinks you always have to be or want to be with your husband or wife. So I said, well, let me tell you a story. I said, my wife was going to Eretz Yisrael that year to go visit our daughter, who was in Mechala at the time, it was like 5, 6 years ago. And she told me, or she told her friends, you know, what's the part that I'm going to enjoy most about this trip? Okay, again, this is my wife, who's a lawyer, with our kids in the home, going to visit Ahuva. So Dr. Blumenthal, you're an old married man, not old, Chas v'Shalom, but so what would you say would be my wife's part that she's most excited about the trip to go visit Ahuva?
I'm afraid to say it.
Okay. So the girls are like visiting the Kotel, learning with their daughter. Okay. So I look at the other women who are on the panel with me, and they all say at the same time, the plane ride. Because what's the plane ride? You sit by yourself for 13 hours, and you have a little bit of space, and you have a little bit of your time, and no one's calling you, and kids aren't doing this, and you're away from your husband, and right? So, you know, I say all that, just it's so normal to want our space and our own life and our own friends. And that's great. You know, if that's all that a person wants, that's a problem. You know, that's what you want 90% of the time, you know, then there's something to sort of speak about. But just sort of needing space, time, one's own life, not only is that not a problem, but it's absolutely mandatory to have like a healthy relation between two people. So... okay. That's my 2 cents.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Dr. Blumenthal would have said the Kotel. You would have said the Kotel, obviously. But me and my wife, we said the plane ride. You know,
I would have said shawarma.
The taxi drivers, you know.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Blumenthal, Blass, for sharing the insights and the tools. And to framing things properly, and hopefully people had what to gain. I'm sorry we didn't get to every question. Obviously, there's so much that we can discuss and we should discuss. And please God, we'll find other opportunities to continue these discussions. People can reach out to me if there are other venues that they want, other things that we can address at other times. I saw coming up that YU Connects is going to be doing something with Rabbi Sittner coming up. About marriage, Shalom Bias issues, a few series. So maybe keep your eyes open for that. I'm sure it'll be wonderful. And again, you can always reach out to me, Rabbi Blass, any of the Mashkichim and YU. And we're happy to put things together. We're happy to first help you and also to put things together if the Tzibor is desirous of that. And the fact that we have at our disposal people like Dr. Blumenthal, who at the drop of a hat says, absolutely, I'm going to come and help you out, is priceless. It's really, people, we can't take advantage or take it for granted how amazing that really is. So thank you, Rabbi Blass, who's always willing to give his time, day or night. And please God, I hope everyone walked away with a little something. And Amir Tashem, our marriages should really strengthen over this difficult period of time when we pay attention to all these things that they've highlighted for us tonight. So thank you very much, and have a good evening.
Thank you, Rebecca, and be well.
Thank you very much.
Have a good night, everybody. Be well.
Thank you very much.
Bye, Johnny. Johnny, the beer looks great.
Sparta, wait till I'm...
tomorrow, 34 days. Yeah. Nady, you too.